Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my friends and darling angels, to Web Sleuths Radio. Web Sleuths Radio, the healthy choice in true crime. I have no idea what that means. I just like the way it sounds. It sounds so hip and trending. First show after Turkey Day. Now, I enjoy eating my own weight in stovetop stuffing on Thanksgiving Day. That's how I express my thankfulness on Thanksgiving. So I'm running a little slow because I'm still digesting. Web Sleuths Radio is brought to you by a wonderful organization called DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. This is a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, interventions, and preventions. Visit them at DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. And now the legal stuff. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and the host, and I take no responsibility for them, especially my own opinions. No responsibility whatsoever. Web Sleuths Radio is not the same as WebSleuths.com, which is a completely different corporate entity. So there. Now, tonight, Kim Sturr, our executive producer, Web Sleuths travel agent, audience moderator, and media specialist, is on board with us taking calls at 760-825-0933. Joining us is private investigator extraordinaire Ron Rugen, reporter Isabel Zender, and Levi Page will be on board. Plus, finally, for the first time in the Web Sleuths radio studio, I have an audience. Granted, it's an audience of one person, my friend from California. She flew in just to be in the audience tonight and to take care of my insane cat so it doesn't attack my keyboard while I'm trying to talk. But first, there's lots going on in the world. Let me give you a little good news, first of all. America's Most Wanted with John Walsh is coming back. Now, the idiots at Fox Television canceled the show, but thank goodness Lifetime picked it up. It will start airing on December 2nd, 9 p.m. Eastern. That's the good news. Bad news, where do I start? When I open up the internet or the paper, I just want to throw it down and go back to bed most days. The wife of Syracuse associate head coach Bernie Fine said in a taped phone conversation that she worried that her husband had sexually molested a teen ball boy. This is according to ESPN. Now, this was in a taped conversation. Fine's wife said she was worried about the molestation and said her husband had, quote, issues. The date of this tape phone call, 2002. Let's see, if I do my math correctly, that's a full 9 years ago. And we're just hearing about it now, and the guy's been coaching this whole time. Three other alleged victims have come forward to say Bernie Fine has molested them. So another coach is in the mix of possible pedophilia. And it just feels like the Catholic Church again. I mean, what the hell? How do we trust anyone anymore? Is it time to test men in position of dealing with children to see if they have pedophile tendencies? Is that what we're going to have to do? I don't know. And by the way, heaven help the poor guy who truly wants to help kids by mentoring or coaching. Everyone is going to look at him with suspicion now, thanks to all these coaches and others. Is this just the tip of the iceberg? That's the scary thing with these predators taking up coaching. Is that the new place that they're trying to find their prey? Is this going to be like the priests in the Catholic Church? I don't know. It sure kind of feels like that. Now, until we can somehow cure pedophilia, we first and foremost need to protect society from these monsters. Absolutely. They need to be put away for life. End of story. Now, I've made the suggestion over and over to the powers that be that if they would just let me do my own form of therapy to these pedophiles. Now, my therapy includes a box cutter, salt, and a lemon. Trust me, the problem would decrease greatly. But alas, I have been met with stone cold silence. Not code, make that cold silence. Okay, it's time to move on. Tonight, we welcome private investigator Ron Rugen. Ron has been on the ground and meeting with, interviewing, and just knows everything there is to know about the case of missing baby Lisa Irwin. Also joining us is Isabel Zender. Isabel is covering the baby Lisa story on TheExaminer.com, and we also have a surprise guest, our very own Levi Page. And Levi Page always has the good stuff. And has Levi called in yet? Yes, he's here. Levi, welcome.
Hey, Trisha. Hi, how are you?
Hi. Let me just say hi to everybody else. Ron, are you with us, my dear?
I am right here.
Ron, thank you so much. I know you had a football game to go to tonight, and you canned it, and I think you did it for us, and I really appreciate it. So hang tight. We'll be getting to you shortly. And Isabel, my darling, are you there as well?
I am here as well, and can I share one little bit of good news?
Yes, I want good news, please.
Yay. Adam Clifford, 19 years old, who was missing for a week, has been found.
That, and found safe?
Found safe. Safe.
Oh, now see,
found safe.
That is great news. We need more of that. We need that to kind of invigorate us, because it feels like every time there's another missing child or a missing person, and we don't find out anything, or we find that they're dead, it's like just another, you know, 100-pound weight on our shoulders. So that is great news. Thank you so much, Isabel. But first off, we're going to go to the baby Lisa Irwin case. Baby Lisa missing from her parents' home in the middle of the night. Supposedly, according to the parents, someone came in and took her. And, of course, in these cases, when this happens, it brings out all kinds of people. And just recently, it has brought out its fair share, I'm talking about the case, of psychics. And let's go to Levi Page. Levi, there is a particular psychic. What is her name? She's from Texas. What is her name again?
Well, her name is Stephanie, Tricia, and she has a connection to web sleuths. I don't know if any of your people on the message board or in the chat room may know her, but apparently she inserted herself into the Haley Cummings case back in 2009 and actually went on the ground there in Florida about a year ago to search for Haley Cummings and did not even recover anything there. Her connection to web sleuths is, I know that there was a poster, I don't know the particular poster's name, but there was a vision and a dream thread where posters put the visions and the dreams they had during the Haley Cummings case. And apparently she had read that board, had stole the visions and dreams of another poster and had passed them off as her own. And she was a member on another message board and was confronted.
Oh, my gosh.
And she flipped out and had told people that, you know, she had been in the hospital for a suicide attempt, and many people were skeptical of that. And she went on websites and was putting hexes out on people that called her out. So many people don't see her as a stable person. I know that she did charge $600 to the maternal grandmother of Haley Cummings and some of her friends to go down there and search.
Well,
she did not recover anything down there.
Yeah, that's right. I know she didn't do anything in the Haley Cummings case, but in the Lisa Irwin case, let's make this clear. This psychic has been getting a lot of press. I mean, she's been everywhere, and I've just been reading up on her, and a lot of people were giving credence to what she was saying and what she was seeing. Isn't that right, Levi?
Well, yeah, a lot of people were saying that, you know, her vision or whatever she saw was credible because she was able to describe the area. You know, I don't know if she is a psychic, if she has powers or not. I can't judge that. But some people are also saying that she could just go to Google Maps and read blogs and get the same sort of info.
So she apparently took, we did have a dream and visions thread during the Haley Cummings case, because so many people were having dreams and visions, and we actually talked a lot about it, because it really went against kind of what we do on web sleuths, but we allowed it. And so apparently this quote-unquote psychic stole one of our members' visions/dreams, put it on her blog, or put it on another blog, and then was called out. And didn't Stephanie put a hex on our poster who called her out?
Yes, she put a hex on many people. Well, what it was someone that claimed to be a friend of hers had put a hex on her, but whenever people discovered her IP, they knew that it originated from the same IP that Stephanie was using, and her excuse was that it was a friend who was using her computer that did it.
Oh, of course. We've heard that a million times. Well, Levi, you're the first one to report about this connection to the Haley Cummings case, and I think it's very important.
A lot of people already know about it. A lot of people that follow the Haley Cummings case had already known, and their eyebrows were already raised as soon as they knew, as soon as they seen her name connected with the case like me. As soon as I seen it, I said, oh, my gosh, here we go again, another circus. And we see again, if you read her blog, she's involved in drama now. She's fighting with people back and forth. And, you know, if you're a credible psychic, I don't know if you have to you know, fight with all these people on the internet.
You don't. And that's a sign right there that there's something wrong, is when somebody continually fights back and forth, you know, with somebody. Just stick to the topic and ignore the people. That was a hard lesson for me to learn, because believe me, I did my share of fighting on the internet, and I finally realized arguing with someone on the internet is like arguing with air. You know, you'll never get anything accomplished. So you just got to move on and stick to the topic. Levi, do you know, again, you're the first one that has reported this, and I know you say a lot of people know it, but there's a lot of people out there that don't have the facts, you know, filed in their brain like you do and a lot of people on Web Sleuth. But Stephanie has this connection to the Haley Cummings case. Have you heard the latest? Supposedly she tried to commit suicide. Is she involved with the family at all? And I'm going to go to Ron and Isabel on this in a minute. But do you know anything about her connection with the family and the baby Lisa Irwin case?
I don't know. To be honest, I haven't been reading a lot of what she has said. Because I know that she's done a lot of blogs the past couple of days. I've just skimmed through there right from going on the air. But it seems, from what I'm hearing, is that she, from what I've read on her blog, that she does not, it has not been on the ground there in Kansas City, but wants to go on the ground. And I don't know how she's going to be able to do that, if she's going to try to, you know, collect donations to do that, try to get money from someone.
Because she did do that
in the Haley Cummings case. She charged Marie Griffiths and two friends of Marie Griffiths's $600 for her plane ticket to get there and then go back to Dallas.
Oh, no, that's just too bad. Levi,
and
can you hang for a bit?
I think, 2 days.
Go ahead. She stayed 2 days?
I think she stayed for 2 days there in Florida and had searched, and whenever she did not get the, you know, when it was almost, her time was ticking, almost done, she became frustrated, and she was calling up family members and asking family members what sort of visions they were having.
Oh, my God.
And from the people that were with her, really doubted her psychic abilities.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, I can understand why. Levi, can you hang for a little bit, or do you have to run?
I got to go, but I just wanted to get that out there because she does have a connection to Web Sleuth.
Well, thank you.
An
and we'll, we'll be watching for the hexes. Believe me, I don't need a hex. I've already got enough crap in my life that if she did a hex, it wouldn't do any good. Levi, who's on your show tomorrow night? Are you doing a show?
Yes, I'm doing a show. I don't know who the guests are, but I'm going to do a show tomorrow at 8 Central, 9 Eastern. Thanks for that, Trisha. You have a great show.
Hey, thank you, Levi. Don't forget Levi's show every night, Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock Eastern. Now let's go to our two guests, Ron Rugen, the private eye extraordinaire who has been on the ground since day one, since he lives there, in the baby Lisa Irwin case, and Isabel Zander with TheExaminer.com, a reporter who does many in-depth stories and who's been on the show before, and we just love her reporting. Let's go to Ron first. Ron, what can you tell me about this psychic that we've been talking about with the connection to the baby Lisa Irwin case?
Well, first of all, and this may be a bit anal on my part, wouldn't be the first time I've been accused of being that, but having been a former broadcast journalist, I would respectfully refer to as an alleged psychic or a self-proclaimed psychic. I don't know if we can accurately call her a psychic because from what I've read, I haven't seen anything where she's been successful, legitimately successful or anything. But what do I know about her? She just first came to my attention last week whenever I saw one of the Facebook pages that there was going to be a search. And anytime I see a search, I find that of interest here. You know, I live less than 10 miles one direction from the crime scene, and my office is less than 10 miles from the other direction. So, you know, I'm kind of staying on top of this, and I communicate with a lot of the reporters that are involved with this case as well. And so she first came to my attention whenever she talked about, a search. I went out to the search site on Saturday, got there about 10 o'clock local time, and I'll tell you, it was miserable weather. My feet were cold and wet when I got home. I didn't even do the search. I was just in the parking lot. You had to hold the canopy down, the tent down, in order for, it not to blow away, and it was just miserable out there. And there were so many, good people out there that care. And, everybody, now I didn't talk to every single person there, but I talked to several people, and everybody I spoke to at the site pretty much had the same opinion that I did, that we really don't believe that this is a psychic vision, but we're not going to not check something out just because it might logically make some sense.
Got it. Okay. And we're not going to spend too much time on this. It was just kind of a hot topic, and I wanted to get it out there. And then we're going to move on to more details in the baby Lisa Irwin case. But let's go to Isabel Zander with Examiner.com. Isabel, what can you add about this alleged psychic?
Well, I wrote about her today, and I've been in contact with a woman named Shelley, who says that she belongs to some, I can't find the name of it right now, but anyway, it's a psychic group, and she's not a psychic or anything. She just goes there and reads their visions and things on the baby Lisa case, and she said that she didn't know, but that Stephanie was also a member there and was kind of a silent member for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's telling me that, and she's going to give me all the information, but she's saying that Stephanie stole a picture of hers, I guess, and that it was her picture that she used in this, that generated this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And that she's alleging the exact same thing that Levi was saying in the mm-hmm. Haley Cummings case, basically taking information. But again, I don't have all the information yet. She's going to send it to me.
And then you'll do a story on it, I take it, right? Hopefully.
Yeah, I did a story on it. I did today. I did a couple
right.
of stories on it. But I will do an update. Mm-hmm.
Great. Will you let us know so we can post that on Web Sleuth so we can find out?
Sure.
Oh, go ahead. Ron Rugen.
Sorry. I think this Stephanie chick is toast. I think after she came out today and Isabel reported on it, the vulgarities that she used and the childish and immature responses she used to people that allegedly criticized her, I think she has lost any credibility if she ever had any in the first place. You can't come out and criticize the media for your problems. You've got to respect the media and know that they're trying to help. And if not for the media, these missing person cases would not be alive.
And you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Isabel Zander, go ahead.
Well, interestingly, in the article that I did, I went ahead and put her own words in here, so I was not trying to be against her in any way, just sharing what she had to say and also sharing what other people were saying. So I tried to make it as balanced as I could, and I don't know if she was angry with mine or not. But
well, you'll know if you get a hex, so be prepared.
No hex is coming this direction, thank you.
Well,
I don't accept them.
And me either. And I think this is a cautionary tale, and this is why I wanted to start out with it, because in all of these high-profile cases, people come out of the woodwork, and the problem is, and Ron and Isabel, you know this, when you are desperate, I mean, think of your child being gone. If it were me, I would be talking to anybody. I don't care if they said they were psychic and they could find my son. I'd probably give them money. I would be an idiot because I would be so frantic, and it's important to show these people, the true side of them, whatever that true side may be. And I will add a little inside information about Web Sleuth, if you don't mind. It's just kind of interesting. And I've actually talked about this before. A couple of years ago, maybe three, we decided to try and let a psychic discussion take place, with psychics on Web Sleuth. It lasted about 5 minutes because, I mean, immediately people are fighting and psychics are emailing me, and one psychic emailed me and said, oh, I see you're using code names now for everybody, so we can't tell when you're calling us a name. I had no idea what they were talking about. I mean, it was a huge Mongolian cluster within minutes, so that didn't last too long. So, and I know there are people out there that truly want to help. I am not trying to disrespect psychics in any way. You know, that's your thing. Good for you. Just, if you're gonna behave like the Stephanie did, we're gonna expose you. And when people are asking for money, that's the biggest red flag that there is. Okay, let's get back to the baby Lisa Irwin case. Baby Lisa supposedly taken from her crib by a stranger in the night. Dad was working the overnight shift for the first night. Mom was home getting drunk, and the police obviously suspect baby Lisa's mother, although they haven't come out and actually said she is a suspect, or have they? Have I missed that, Ron?
No, they haven't. They haven't said that. Paserno, one of her attorneys, has in a news conference. His answer was, "Well, they've said as much," and that's the extent of it. But you know, I think in any, I mean, you all know this. I don't follow missing person cases like you all do. I do mostly just normal PI work here in Kansas City. You know, whatever the case may be. But I think, from what I understand, in most missing person cases, you always look at the parents first.
Sure.
Who do the statistics?
You have to. You absolutely have to. And Ron Rugen, private investigator, who lives right in the area where baby Lisa was taken, you have developed quite, I don't know, a friendship with some of these people, a relationship at least, to where you can sit down and talk to them. When I say them, there are all kinds of people involved. There's a house down the street with a woman who received a phone call from one of the phones that was stolen from baby Lisa's house the night that the little baby was kidnapped. Supposedly, after she was kidnapped, the phone rang, the supposed phone that was dead or wasn't on, and it rang to this particular woman's house, and she lives just a little bit away. Now, you have talked to some of these people in this mysterious house with this mysterious phone, and you've also talked to people directly involved with the case. Ron, do you have anything new you can tell us? I mean, you mentioned something today, and I'm not sure if I'm supposed to mention it or not, so I don't want to say it.
Give me a hint.
You said you had coffee with somebody.
No, I've made an invitation to have coffee with an extended family member. That I've been told that they'll keep it in mind, and I'm not going to push that. But I've opened the doors to anybody that may have some knowledge on this case or some insight one way or another. So, you know, I'm willing to sit down with anybody just to kind of pick their brain. I think the more Megan Wright talks to me, and I'm not saying she's culpable for anything. I don't even know that would be true. But
tell us who Megan Wright is very quickly connected to the baby Lisa Irwin case.
Megan Wright is the woman whose cell phone was attempted that night by someone using either Deborah Bradley or someone else using her phone. So in other words, from Deborah Bradley's phone that night, someone attempted to dial Megan Wright's phone. She dated for about 5 months this drifter named Jersey, who is now in jail on unrelated charges. I think he's in jail for stealing the van that he had stolen some days after. So he's got an April 8th court date, and he's in on $10,000 bond. So that's where Megan Wright comes in. She lived in a house at that time, that night. She lived in a house with five other adults and three children. Now, there were two married couples. One of the couples had two children. The other had one child. And then the extra adult is Dane, who was living there at that time. Megan Wright now no longer lives in that house. She's moved to Springfield, Missouri, to be with a companion down there. And Dane no longer lives in the house either. He did finally, after several weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, reappear here a couple weeks ago. And so he is back in the Kansas City area now. I've texted him in the last few days. I've texted him twice. I'm not going to harass him or anything, but I've reached out to him and asked him if he would take the opportunity to discuss who he was on the phone with on Megan Wright's phone off and on all that night before, you know, it comes out somewhere else so he can be on the offense on this thing, and I've not yet received a reply.
We're talking with Ron Rugen, private investigator, and Isabel Zender from Examiner.com about the Lisa Irwin case, baby Lisa Irwin, missing for over a month now. And we're talking about Megan Wright, the woman whose phone received a phone call from one of the phones stolen from Lisa Irwin's house, baby Lisa Irwin's house. And here's the thing, Ron, and then we're going to move to Isabel here. Here's the thing. Megan may have nothing to do with it. This all could just be some weird red herring, correct?
You know, that's absolutely correct. Megan may just have been the unlucky person that owned the phone, and I did a blog here about a week ago, I believe it was, and, you know, my take on it is that it's too difficult to determine who used the phone that night to attempt the phone call. We don't know if the call went through, but we don't know for sure. There's so many players involved or potentially involved who may have made that attempted phone call. So what I did was I suggest reversing the process and look at who may have been the intended recipient of that call. And
exactly.
So that narrows it down to about roughly three people. I mean, it could be more, but mm-hmm. probably either Dane, who was in the household using the phone that night, Jersey, the boyfriend of the former boyfriend of Megan Wright, or Megan Wright, the cell phone owner.
Exactly, and that's a great way to look at it. Let's go to Isabel Zender with Examiner.com. Isabel has done many articles and very extensive research and investigation into the case of missing baby Lisa Irwin. And we have a question from the chat room. Has DB, that's Debbie, Lisa's mom, ever said if Lisa's favorite blanket was missing too? Debbie said Lisa slept with glowworm Barney and her favorite blanket. Do we know if that blanket is missing as well? Isabel, have you heard anything about this?
I've not heard anything about her blanket missing.
Have you heard anything about glowworm Barney or anything else missing with baby Lisa other than obviously baby Lisa?
No.
Okay.
Ron,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. She, Deborah Bradley, had a little Barney stuffed animal with her on camera, if you remember,
right.
the first few days. And I got to give credit to criminal profiler Pat Brown. Pat and I were talking about that. And Pat, I think, wrote a blog about that time called Copycat Crime or Copycat Cover-Up. And she pointed mm-hmm. out how some of the ways that the Bradley Irwin duo were treating their public on-camera persona was not a lot different than the McCanns.
Very interesting. Isabel, you have mm-hmm. covered cases like this extensively, and you've been a guest on Web Sleuths and a member of Web Sleuths, and we appreciate all your hard work. Do you have any late news that perhaps we don't know about? Because it's getting to the point now where we're kind of rehashing everything. I mean, I've seen this cycle so many times. There's so much information that just comes just like a tidal wave, and then it slowly goes away, and pretty soon we're just rehashing the same thing. What's the latest that you know?
Oh, the latest. Well, basically, right now my mind is on this what's been going on with Stephanie, and but as far as the latest, I've been in touch with police. I keep in touch with Steve Young. He's been really good about responding to my emails. And
tell us who Steve Young is.
Steve Young is the spokesperson of Kansas City Police.
Okay.
And so he's been good about keeping in touch with me. When I write to him, he's even on weekends or whatever, he'll right back.
So in other words, Stephanie the psychic is kind of the latest thing, and that says to me that the case is cooling off. But go ahead, Isabel.
Well, one thing is a lot of people get really frustrated, and I'm hearing it from, and I see this in every single case, every case. There's different players, different people that get involved in the cases because they're local or whatever, and they pick up on the story, and then they're following the story, and they get extremely emotionally involved in the case. And I understand that. I get emotionally
right.
involved in the cases, too. And so what happens at a point like where we are now, you know, police scaling back and all that, then all of a sudden people start to get into a panic mode. And it's, I mean, I'm just telling you what I've seen as a whole. And so then they start blaming the police. The police aren't doing enough. The police aren't doing this. They're not doing that. And they don't understand that the police can't come out and say much about the case. They can't
right.
play their cards. I mean, they're working on building a case. Anything that they do that jeopardizes that case could mean somebody walking free. So that's something that I really wanted to point out because that's been a huge issue in these
Well, and that's
cases.
And that's absolutely true, Isabel. And it's, you know, it's that's a double-edged sword that we deal with, the catch-22. Mm-hmm. You know, we want the investigation to go forward. We want the police to do the best job they can. But then we also want to know everything that's going on, and we can't. Excuse me. I'm getting all excited here and gagging on my own air. Okay. We have a question from V. LeGay, and the question is, please ask Isabel if she has heard of John Chevalet, the uncle, that's the uncle, and if she has opinion about his Facebook post. I heard Ron chuckling, so this will be interesting.
I actually was doing a little research on that the other day, and I was a little confused because some of the stuff that he's saying, well, first of all, the spelling of his name is different in the posts that he makes, and then my understanding was that he made some comments and then deleted the page.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Chivalet spelled Chivalette as what I believe was the correct spelling. And the one that was posting was a different spelling than that. I can't remember what it was right now. But so he would post things where, like, he knew what was going on, that he knew was that Deborah was hiding something and so on. And then he deleted this big posting that he had done. Somebody
like he had second
thoughts. Other day.
Yeah, second thoughts and try to get rid of it. Go ahead.
And I'm not sure if it's really him. You know what I mean? Why is the spelling of his name different? I'm a little confused about that.
Well, you know, I don't know. But, Ron, you were chuckling there for a moment. Why don't you tell us what you think? I can hear that deep chuckle. No, I want to hear it. Come on. You're laughing. Tell us what's going on.
On Facebook, Chevalet goes by Chevalerati or something to that effect.
Right.
And I've observed some of his postings, and he even came after me one day and called me Ronnie Rugrat, and said I was getting publicity on the back of a baby and crazy things like that. But then I also saw some people call him on it, and it appears possibly, here's all the caveats, that there may have been a confession that he was allegedly drinking when he was posting these comments. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but there were some inferences to that. But, you know, let's say, just for discussion purposes, it is Deborah's uncle, the brother to baby Lisa's would-have-been grandmother, whose also name was Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it is him, you know, the man's in, Pennsylvania, and, he could get on there, theoretically, and make all these accusations and allegations and tell what a screwed-up family, and a lot of us have, you know, somewhere out in the distance, screwed-up family members and such. You know, I'm sure maybe some of my family members might say that about me. Who knows? But, you know, for him to go on there and say that he's talked to Takapina and he's talked to Deborah about this, it goes back to being, my reporter background. You know, I would want confirmation of that. I'm from the show me state. You know, you've got to prove to me that happened. I'm not going to just take it as someone's word.
Exactly. We're talking with a private investigator, Ron Rugen. He has been basically at ground zero in the case of missing baby Lisa Irwin. And I want to say Ron isn't making any money off of this. He's doing it because he cares, and he's just trying to help. Also with us is Isabel Zender from Examiner.com. Isabel is an excellent reporter who has done many in-depth stories about many missing children. Unfortunately, there's just too many out there. Two-part question. First of all, who is Mike Lorette, and do you know where Mike Lorette normally lives? Ron, why don't we start with you?
Yes, Mike Lorette is maybe a second cousin, but he's a cousin to Deborah Bradley, baby Lisa's mother, Lisa Irwin's mother. I'm trying to get away from calling her baby Lisa. That sounds stilted. But he's a cousin to Deborah Bradley, lives in Houston, Texas, from what I gather, is a former, has done some tours overseas. I think it was Afghanistan, maybe Iraq, but I think Afghanistan. And he came up here early in the going when Stanton arrived, and coincidental or not, I'm not sure. And he did a few things on camera, and talked about the fact that he served his country, and now you know, it's time for him to call on people to get things back. So, you know, he's I'm not sure whether he's still here in Kansas City or not, or if he's returned to Houston, but he is a relative of Deborah Bradley. And keep in mind, when we talk about these relatives of these individuals, Deborah Bradley is still legally married to another man, and her and Jeremy Irwin are not married.
That's right. That's a good thing to keep to remind people of. Isabel, what do you know about Mike Lorette, and what can you add to what Ron said?
Well, when Gil Abeda was in town, Gil is the father of a boy named Christopher who went missing when he was 7 months old from his crib.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, Gil has worked to help other families, many other families, find missing children, and even going into Mexico and so on. And so when he came to Missouri, from Colorado, his goal was to meet with the family. This is what he always does. He meets with the family and tries to help them and support them. And everybody, he says, has always welcomed him with open arms. They're ready for him. They want his help. People will take any help, like you said earlier.
Absolutely, yes.
He said that in this case, this is the first case he's ever had that has been so bizarre that people did not welcome him. He went to the house, and it was the early days when there was still lots of media outside and
mm-hmm.
all of that going on. So he went to the house where Deborah, Jeremy, their sons, and Mike Lorette were staying, and it was with a relative. And when he went to the door, he said that he was not welcomed well at all, and that he was told that I think it was by Mike Lorette that they had orders not to speak to anyone.
So in other words, the father of a missing child came to offer help, and he was treated very coldly. Go continue, please.
Very coldly. And they said, we have orders not to talk to anyone. So Gil said, I didn't drive 1,000 miles here, you know, to be rejected at the door. You know, mm-hmm. I need to talk to you, you know, or do you want to come out here and we can talk to media? So, you know, anyway, fortunately, he got a foot inside the door. So he went inside, and he said that it was just really, really odd. Deborah was doing dishes. She didn't acknowledge him, never acknowledged him. He talked with, I believe it was Mike Lorette, and I believe Jeremy was there and so on. For about 30 minutes, he said it was non-productive, really, and then he left. And all attempts to try to connect with the family again were unsuccessful. And he says he stuck it out there for about a month, but he was getting no help whatsoever from the family. Finally went home. But he did, while he was there, him and his team, he did a lot of research, did a lot of work, and they did put together a profile, I guess you would call it. I don't know what else to call it, of a potential suspect, and gave that to police and the FBI. And so it's hoped that, you know, his hope is that they're still following on that. And he was also concerned about two cemeteries located within, I think, a block or two of the last sighting of a man walking with a baby.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gentleman at 4:10 in the morning, Mike Thompson, who says that he, as he took the exit off the freeway, he said he saw a man walking with a baby. And they were both very lightly dressed. And the area where that was at was very, very close to two cemeteries. And it was kind of odd that just recently another little baby went missing from Missouri about 4 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many similarities. I tried to point those out in an article in the cases. Tyler's and baby Lisa's, and I almost wondered if it was somewhat of a copycat type thing, but the mother said that her baby went missing from his crib last time she saw him was 10:30 at night. There were just similarities. It was also a Monday night. Supposedly she was drinking on and on. And so anyway, she ended up murdering her baby from what she supposedly admitted to murdering her baby.
Yes.
And the baby was found right next to a cemetery. So that really raised, you know, a flag for Gil when we were talking about that and saying he really hopes that that's been very well
searched.
And searched again, yep. Because he kind of wondered, you know, if that wouldn't be like a really...
Well, it could be, you know, perhaps
a good hiding place. But.
Well, yeah. I mean, you never know. Whoever took the child, maybe that would be a good place to hide her. I mean, that very well could be.
He was wondering if cadaver dogs might not be able to tell because of so many people. I mean, he doesn't know either.
Yeah.
And neither do I, but...
That's an interesting question. That very well could be. Ron, go ahead. Ron Rugen, private investigator.
Now,
we're talking about Lisa Irwin.
Gil Beta, and I'm sure Gil is a very well-meaning person, and my heart goes out to what he's gone through. But I don't know if the rest of you have heard this, but when he was here, he was accused of what the police said was poisoning the well. And it's unfortunate that it happened, but apparently I'm told that Gil went to Mike Thompson and showed him a photograph of one of the potential players in this case. And because he showed him a photograph and said, hey, you know, in a non-law enforcement type lineup kind of approach, that he was said to have poisoned the well, and that then Thompson would be excluded as far as looking at a lineup and trying to identify who the man was that he supposedly had sighted that night.
That's right, and I do remember you talking about that, Ron. And it is tragic because you're right. He just wants to help, but there is a line between helping and interfering, and that's not good at all. Let's talk about the sightings. Isabel, you mentioned the sighting a little bit ago. Ron, how reliable are these sightings of a man carrying a baby? Has it been disproven, or do we know? Is it still up in the air? What's going on?
You know, I was very skeptical of all of the sightings. You know, we talked about it being, or it was mentioned that it was cold that night or cool that night. Factually, it was a warm week in Missouri. The high that day was 87 degrees, and it got down to, at least at the airport, an overnight low of 52. So it wasn't terribly cold that night. But anyway, the first alleged sighting occurred somewhere around 12:15 p.m. And in that sighting, a woman and her husband separately, because the husband was going to work and he was outside, and the woman who was in the house, and they both supposedly saw a man carrying what appeared to be a baby down the street. Now, this person also, according to the couple, took a detour through the backyard areas in a what they call a path that this Jersey character was familiar with taking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what raised some of the red flags about that. There was another alleged sighting that occurred around 2:30, or potential sighting, and this was about... if I remember right, a half mile or thereabouts away, mm-hmm. down the road by a BP gas station. It was their surveillance camera that had this potential sighting. And it had been declared on all of the talking head shows and such that this man was coming out of the woods and, you know, that, you know, it may be something. Well, in looking at the video closer, there's nothing in this man's arms. The arms are swinging at his side. It's a real grainy video due to the
mm-hmm.
quality of surveillance cameras. But I've driven that corridor many times, and that's not a wooded area. That's a tree line. If you go on the other side of the tree line that you see in that one-dimensional videotape, it's a residential area. So it makes no sense to me why someone would be walking back through that direction at 2:30 in the morning, where just as easily you could be walking up, you know, North Brighton, and going that route. It makes no sense to go through, you know, that area over there. You know, even if you're carrying a baby. The third potential sighting, was around, I think it was 4:10 10 or a little after 4 o'clock in the morning by a gentleman named Mike Thompson. Mike was riding a motorcycle. He lives about 90 minutes away. He works at the Ford plant at Clay Como here nearby. And he apparently stays with a relative once a week whenever he comes down for work and then goes back. And so he was around the area, if I remember right, of 48th and Randolph, if you want to look on your Google Maps, and supposedly saw someone who looked to be dressed lightly with a very minimally clad baby, and thought, you know, that it was unusual that they would be out, you know, in 50-degree weather, dressed like that. But at the same time, he said he didn't stop because being on a motorcycle, there wasn't much that he could do to assist anyway.
Well, that's all of that is just, again, it just adds to the mystery surrounding this case. We do have a question. Ron, I'll go to you, and then Isabel, I'll be going to you. What is the scoop on Debbie's brother, Philip Netz? Where does he live? Is it possible he lives in the Irwin house basement? And does he have an alibi for the night in question? Ron Rugen, what do you say?
Good questions, and I don't have the answer to all of them. He was the one that we saw in the surveillance video from the grocery store that night about 5 o'clock that was taking Debbie to the store and purchasing a box of wine. And from that point on, it's cloudy as to where his whereabouts were. Now, there was a TV station, KSPR, out of Springfield, Missouri, which is 3 hours from here, that had reported, and then it got re-reported, that Philip was in the house that night sleeping. I don't think that's accurate. I've talked to local reporters here. They don't know anything about it. I think the way that inaccuracy occurred was someone who rewrote copy from what they saw from the local reporters here, rewrote it in such a way where they got confused with maybe Lisa's brother being in the other room, the baby, compared to maybe Philip, the Debbie's brother, being in the other room. So I think that's how that confusion occurred.
Oh, boy, it's so easy to get things confused.
Yeah,
it's easy for that to happen.
I get confused on this stuff, and I'm right here. So does he live in the basement? Don't know.
Wasn't it his house?
I think he lives nearby, though.
Isabel, what were you saying? Isabel Zender?
You know, somebody was mentioning that they thought that the house where Deborah and Jeremy were staying was Philip's house during the time after Baby Lisa went missing. Is that right, Ron, or do you know?
I don't believe. I believe it was an Irwin family member.
That's what I had always thought.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
That's over on North Walden. I've been over there that direction a few times, and it was, I can't put my finger on it if it was Jeremy's brother or his father, but it's one of the two, and there's been some debate over that, but an Irwin family member.
Okay, that's what I thought.
We're actually starting to run out of time here. So, Isabel, I want to ask you, because a lot of people have asked this, and I got an email asking this before the show, and it's, I'm going to put you on the spot, but the best you can, what do you think of this case? What do you think happened? I know you can't really come out and say, but you kind of can. So do the best. Let us know what you think. Maybe tell us the strangest thing about this case, and maybe if you have any ideas, what's next?
Personally, I can't ignore, I mean, I know that some people will ignore it, and I know that the attorney suggests that we ignore it, but the cadaver dog hit really sticks with me.
Mm-hmm.
On the bedroom floor. I find that, you know, that first of all, it's an FBI-trained dog, and I don't think the FBI would use cadaver dogs if they hit on every toenail and dirty diaper along their path. I'm not saying that this cadaver dog hit was accurate for sure. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it does raise questions in my mind as to what might have happened. The other thing is I got to thinking, and, you know, this is just my own opinions, my own thoughts, just like anyone else. was everybody was complaining that they didn't take the carpet out. The police didn't take the carpet out of the bedroom. And my thought was possibly could the baby, and I don't want to say that she's passed away or anything like that. I hope she's still alive. But if something did happen, an accident or something that night, could the baby have been laying on a comforter and the hit was on the comforter and they didn't need to take carpet? I mean, I don't know. Just a thought. And who knows? And I don't know what the technology, and I have no idea. Just throwing it out there. So that was a thought that I had. And the other thing was the little girl, the four-year-old little girl that belongs to the next-door neighbor who was there drinking with her that night. There was never any clarification. Ron, you please let me know if you have it, as to what happened with the little girl. I know that she was watching a video with the boys, is what Deborah said, but I don't remember ever hearing that she left the house. And so I wondered if when the mom went home at 10:30, but then she was seen sitting outside till 11:30, where was this little girl through all that? And I wondered if maybe she spent the night, had fallen asleep and was there at the house.
Very interesting. That could be. That could be. Well,
a lot about that.
And keep going. Do you have other thoughts you want to wrap up with?
I'm just very concerned about the children, what they might have seen or heard. I know they were just finally able to be re-interviewed, but a lot of time went by. That was concerning to me. If she really was drinking that much and she was out of it, I keep thinking that perhaps an accident could have occurred. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, somebody could have broken in and taken the baby, and it could have been somebody for revenge, you know, the person that Gil had passed on the information to police, his theory would go along with a revenge.
Revenge type thing. That's the scary thing. We just don't know. Isabel, when is your next article, or do you know when your next article about the Lisa Irwin case, is it when it's going to come out?
Oh, they're coming out almost daily. So
okay, great.
I'd say probably in the next day or two.
Fantastic. Hang tight. Don't leave just yet. Let's go to Ron Rugen, private investigator, has been on the case of missing Lisa Irwin since day one. Ron, what are your thoughts? What do you think happened? What do you think's going on? And what's the strangest thing about this case? And what's next? How's that for a big loaded ball of questions?
Wow.
You can answer it, Ron.
Go for it.
You know, this case just blows my mind. And I thought really in the early going that Mom had an oh heck moment and needed to cover up an accident and, you know, panicked about it. But, you know, now I've been exposed to things that that I've seen and heard here locally that I just honestly do not know. Like Isabel, I can't get past the cadaver dog hit. I think from what I'm told by experts, I'm not an expert, from what I'm told, those hits are pretty doggone good hits when they occur. You know, the whole attorney thing about, well, it was a poopy diaper, you know, or something like that. Well, you know, all of us who've had kids have changed their diapers on the living room floor, on the couch, in the bedroom, on the bed, in the changing table. Why weren't there hits in those areas as well? If that's, you know, that easily thrown off. You know, I wonder, as a possibility, you know, Jersey and Megan Wright broke up about a week and a half before this incident occurred. Jersey then came to Megan's residence at that time about 3 days following Lisa's disappearance. And he drove up in the yard in a minivan and was looking for her, and her then roommates chased him off. I wonder if maybe in a sick, perverted effort to get Megan back in his life, if maybe he, you know, did abduct Lisa and, you know, was doing that to try to get curry Megan's favor.
Wow, that's an interesting way. Go ahead, Isabel.
I'm not sure I follow that, Ron. What do you mean?
Could Jersey have possibly abducted Lisa, you know, because he and Megan broke up a week and a half earlier, and thinking that, you know, by maybe having a baby and sharing a baby with her, that he might win her heart and get her back and get her back in his life.
The thing is, anything is possible. That's the freaky thing
anything
about this
possible.
Case. So, go ahead, Isabel.
One of the things that's also been very concerning to me, following a lot of missing persons cases, is the attorney. The attorneys in this case, the main one from New York is high-powered defense attorney, and who covers all kinds of different cases, crime cases, and then the one same with Paserno, the local attorney. So why would the parents need these kind of attorneys if everything was okay, is my question.
With all due respect, I'm not sure that they had any choices in the matter. I don't know for sure, but, you know, if I'm in a similar case and Takapina comes to me and nobody else has offered their help and it's free,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'm going to turn it away necessarily. I'm not sure they had a buffet selection of attorneys where they had choices to make.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to wrap it up, but I want to hear your thoughts. So.
I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
It was about Takapina, but sorry.
Well, that's okay. If you think of it, interrupt me again. Just throw something at my head, and
okay.
I will stop talking, I promise, okay? We definitely will keep on the case of missing Lisa Irwin. Unfortunately, the case is starting to cool off. We are discussing it on WebSleuths. Go to websleuths.com/forums and scroll down, and you will see Lisa Irwin's name in the title of the forum, and join us there. We have some amazing sleuths on the case. Ron, what is the address of your blog that people can go read?
My blog address is kansascitypi.blogspot.com. And I've had a lot of requests to follow me on Facebook, and my business page on Facebook is facebook.com/KansasCityPI. So there's the common thread, KansasCityPI, both on the Blogspot as well as Facebook.
Facebook, and you can join Ron on Facebook, and Ron always has interesting things to say, and the great thing about Ron is he is right there and trying to talk to everybody every day, and he shares information. That's what I love about him. Isabel with TheExaminer.com, again, another incredible reporter and someone that we truly appreciate all your great work. Thank you so very much, both of you, for being on the show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes, you may.
I just want to say that I really appreciate people like Ron who are there on the ground, because I'm a national missing persons writer. I'm in Washington State. I can't be everywhere. So it's very helpful to have someone like him and others who are working right there. So just
I agree.
Want to throw that out. I appreciate him.
Well, I appreciate both of your kind comments. I'm humbled, continue to be humbled by all of that. And I think part of what makes me interested in this is, I, as a former news reporter, once
mm-hmm.
it's in your blood, you can't get it out.
True. That is true. Well, that is our win. Thank you, Ron, and thank you, Isabel. Ron Rugen and Isabel Zender, thank you both. We'll have you on WebSleuths Radio again very, very soon, okay?
Thank you.
All righty.
Thanks
for having me.
Kimster, are you with us, my darling?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Kimster, our executive producer, our travel agent, WebSleuths travel agent, audience moderator, and I believe she's also the chief accounting officer for WebSleuths, chief financial officer, excuse me. Kimster, what can you tell us about our new forum that we opened? It's one of the most exciting things we have had going for a long time, although we have lots of exciting things on WebSleuths. It's our serial killer forum, and tell us what's going on. What's the latest?
Well, I'd like to know how many of our listeners know where the Connecticut River Valley is, because in the 1980s, in the Connecticut River Valley, there was a serial killer out there, and the person was actually committing knife murders in and around Claremont, New Hampshire, and the Connecticut River Valley, and believe it or not, there was also a book written about this called The Shadow of Death, and it's by Philip Ginsberg. And there was a segment on Unsolved Mysteries about one of the attacks. And according to our member, Hester Moffat, it was one of the scariest segments they ever saw. How do I know all of this? Because I've been to the serial killer forum. I'm reading about this. So I'm finding out all this information that, you know, if you live over in the Connecticut River Valley, you might want to be in tune to what's going on, and maybe you can help find this killer.
Well, that's a very good point. And that's the thing about the Serial Killer Forum is we're asking for help. So come on, take a look at it. You can also join our missing forum, Missing and Unidentified. We could really use your help there. Our cold case forum. Kimster, how many times have we heard from a family member who says, I was just Googling my mom's name and I saw a thread about her on Web Sleuth. Thank you for not forgetting. I mean, we hear that all the time, don't we?
Yeah, we just actually in the unidentified forum, we just heard from somebody this last week. It was a unidentified that they thought might be a missing person. Mm-hmm. It came to find out it wasn't that missing person, but still the family member was kind enough to register on Web Sleuth, come in, and thank everybody for remembering their loved one.
That's it. And so even if you don't have anything to add, this is my point, even if you don't have anything to add, come on Web Sleuth and just say, I'm thinking of you. I swear to God Almighty, that will make such a big difference in someone's life, and it doesn't cost you anything to do. So, Kimster, final thoughts, do you have any?
I will see you guys in the forums. Right now I've been spending a lot of time in the Unidentified and the Serial Killer Forum, but if anybody needs me, just contact me privately and I'll be happy to help you out.
Thank you, Kimster, and thank you to all of our wonderful listeners tonight in the chat room. Thanks, you guys, and thank you to my one studio audience member for keeping my cat from attacking my my keyboard. So I think every week I will have one audience member. I'll fly somebody in from New York next week just to sit here and look at me while I do it, you know, just for something different. It's Web Sleuth Radio, where we discuss true crime, current events, and we always do it with common sense. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, and we'll see you at websleuth.com. Good night.